Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Insights from Cycles Friendly Church. I am Lynn Davis and I've got Matthew Horsepool with me. Hi Matthew.
Hi Lynn.
And today we're going to be talking about liturgy and services and how do you follow a service when you have sight loss. I am from more of a charismatic slash evangelical background. So Matthew, this is more your area of expertise, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. So I grew up in an Anglican church. I was baptized into an Anglican church. It was a fairly middle of the road, but sort of if it had to tend in one direction, it would tend towards being higher rather than lower. So, you know, we had the same order of service every week with a bit of variation. Obviously, the collect was different and the preface to the Eucharistic prayer was different. And the readings were different and the sermon was different. But the basic service was very, very, very much the same. We had the same service book every week, apart from on family services when we had a slightly different service book. But that was how it worked. And then I carried on as an Anglican, went to churches in Hereford and Coventry, and eventually, for the time being and for the foreseeable future, have settled and sing in the choir at Coventry Cathedral, where liturgy is slightly different. We do have a set service book, but there's more choice in the liturgy that we use slightly. I think probably Coventry Cathedral is slightly lower Anglican than the Anglican that I was brought up in. But it does mean that I know the shape of the service really, really well. And as a child, I didn't really have access to Braille service books. We were still trying to work out how to produce Braille service books when I was a child. And so I had no choice, basically, but to learn everything from memory. And so I learned everything from memory and still do most things from memory to this day. I can recite the Lord's Prayer, of course. I can recite the Nicene Creed. I know how to respond. I know what all the gospel responses are. I know what all the Eucharistic prayer responses are. I think where it gets challenging is if somebody says, right, we're not going to say the Nicene Creed this week. We're going to say the alternative affirmation of faith that is printed on the newsletter. And that's when it gets a little bit tight. And I find that actually it's useful to actually have to have a copy of that in Braille so that I can follow it. But that's me, who's been blind for a long time. I say blind since birth and brought up in an Anglican church and has always been Anglican and, you know, understands all this sort of thing and I'm young and have a good memory. I'd be really interested to hear from you, Lynn, about what it would be like for you if you were going into an Anglican church for maybe the first time or you know, you're not regularly an Anglican. So how would you feel in those sorts of environments?
You're right, I'm not regularly an Anglican. In fact, the only encounter I really had with an Anglican church is I got married in one. I come from a Lutheran tradition originally, so before I sort of ventured into the more evangelical part of church life, I did attend a Lutheran church in Norway, which is where I'm originally from. My dad, he's a retired minister, so he was a minister then. And I did sort of the prayers that you're talking about, the Nicene Creed and all that, I know them, but of course I don't know them in English. I know them in Norwegian. So in the beginning, I would say them in Norwegian when everyone else would say them in English. I wouldn't say them out loud because it would just be very obvious. So this was not really in an Anglican setting, but I've been in other sort of high churches. I've been to Catholic Mass and the creed is slightly different, but it's similar. I have been in a Methodist setting, which is very, very similar again to the Lutheran setting. In fact, Lutherans and Methodists are very interchangeable, especially in Norway. I could say the Lord's Prayer and I could say the Creed in Norwegian. I have since learned them in English, but I still translate them in my head. I don't actually know them, so I translate them in my head, and sometimes my translation is a little bit off the side of what they actually are. In the church that I do attend now, we are a Baptist church, and we do say the creed, even though it's a very low church in that sense. We also say the Lord's Prayer at times, and it did happen as well when I was attending a Pentecostal church. So I did, I'm familiar with the words, although my sort of in my head translation might be slightly different. Could I follow it? Yeah, to a point. I wouldn't be able to say it as much as maybe somebody who has been in that tradition as long as you have, but I would be able to follow it. And I know the blessing, I don't know what it's called, you know, the one at the end that you say at the end of the service.
Yes.
From that point of view, I can participate.
Yeah. So when you had your wedding, I mean, you and I are both very fluent, very proficient Braille readers. Would a service, I mean, did you have a service book at your wedding? Would it have been useful?
It would have been very useful, especially for the hymns, because I didn't know the hymns. They were planned by my husband and his nan. I actually got married in Sierra Leone in West Africa. I didn't have the hymns. And also, I was a bit terrified because what I didn't know and what nobody had ever told me was before a couple is actually wed, you are sitting separately. So I was sitting on my own because I very much rely on the person next to me to know when I'm getting up, when I'm sitting down, and all these things. And I didn't have that because I wasn't sitting next to my husband. And I wish somebody had prepared me for that, and nobody had. We'd done all the walking in, we'd done all the getting up to the altar, we'd done all that rehearsal stuff so that I could get a feel of how the church was. But that bit wasn't there, and I felt very much like a fish out of water at the beginning of that service. Once we had been wed and I was sitting next to my husband and I could feel him stand up and sit down in the first part, I really would have wanted some help there.
Yeah, I can relate to that actually, even as somebody who knows the liturgy very well. I know when to stand up, you know, as in you stand up when the procession moves past you, or you stand up for the gospel reading and for the hymns and things. But I don't necessarily know when the procession has passed. So if I'm not stood next to somebody who's going to point out when to stand up and there's nothing else going on, I mean, for the gospel, for example, the hymn's going on. And so you're supposed to turn to face the gospel as it passes. What I tend to do is sing the hymn and then turn to face the gospel at that point. So that, you know, for the important bit, for the gospel reading, I've turned to face the gospel and that's fine and dandy. But yeah, I do agree. Sometimes it's quite helpful for somebody to say, look, the procession's passed now. You can turn around. Or, you know, on the way out, quite often the procession will come back during the organ voluntary. And it's not so bad now I'm in the choir because I'm in the procession. But that means when I'm in the congregation, I've got no sense of when the procession is likely to have come past. So I tend to stand up until the end of the organ voluntary, even when I don't need to, just because that's the only way in which I can really properly tell that it's safe to sit down because, you know, the organ has stopped.
Yeah, I get that as well. And I even get that with the church that I attend. When I'm not sure when to stand up or sit down, I always feel like it's more safe to stand up, just because at least it sort of makes me look attentive. I'm learning a lot from what you're saying as well, because I wasn't aware of the processions coming in and facing different directions. And that sounds quite, not intimidating is the wrong word, but it does sound like quite a lot of brain work, especially when you can't see. So what do you think is the best way for somebody to assist someone to follow the service in the best possible way then with all of these variations?
I think, honestly, just having somebody next to me to point out these little things is probably the most useful. Because the other thing, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, I'm talking as somebody who knows the liturgy from memory. And if I didn't know the liturgy from memory, a Braille service book might be useful. But I've seen what print service books look like, and they're very cluttered. They're so full of instructions and information about, well, you know, so-and-so comes here and so-and-so does this. On Christmas Day, I was involved in a live television broadcast on BBC One, and it was a fabulous experience. And I decided for that broadcast, as a one-off, I decided to Braille the service booklet for myself. And even though I'd Brailled it myself, I struggled to follow it because there was just so much, you know, going on. So I think actually, if I was going to Braille a service book again, and I would never normally say this as a Braille transcriber, you see, always transcribe what's in the print, you know, and follow print. But I think I might actually put a summary at the start of the service book of literally just what is going on, with no instructions and no information, literally just the words. Because, yeah, the instructions are so hard to follow. Like I say, stand when the procession passes, you sit when the procession passes, you really, I mean, if you're going to do that effectively, have somebody with you. And it's things like, you know, going to communion. You can go to communion when the steward signals you. Well, that's great if you can see the steward signaling you. But if you can't see the steward signaling you, then unless the steward is going to come and help you, or unless you're going to have communion brought to you at your seat, the only way in which that's going to work really is if somebody takes you by the elbow, or you take their elbow and you wander down and receive communion together.
Yeah, yeah, and that is something as well. I do have some experience with that from Lutheran church as well. But even then, the communion can be slightly different as well in the high churches, because in the church that my dad was a minister in Norway, we would get the little individual cups of wine, and we would have the wafer, and then we would have the wine. When I got married in Sierra Leone, we had this massive jug of wine, and it was quite funny because we were kneeling and I wasn't used to kneeling at a communion. And so that was something that was something different for me. And then I was receiving the wafer and I ate the wafer, and then I was supposed to be drinking the wine because somebody told me you're not dipping it in there, because sometimes you do that when you have the big jugs, you just some people dip it in there and some people eat it and then they drink the wine afterwards. So what happened was the vicar held the jug up to my face and I got this massive glug of wine and it was a very, very strong wine. So when I got up, I felt really tipsy.
Yes.
So yeah, I find that the communion is quite hard at knowing what to do when and sort of what's the practice for each individual church. So it's, for me, I would have liked to have someone who would just do running commentary. So someone who took me up to the communion, to the altar to receive communion and told me, like, eat the wafer or hold the wafer. Wait, we're going to dip it in the wine. When my dad was leading the service, he always did that. So if there was a change, he would just whisper it to me as he did the blessing at the front. He would just do the, this is the body of Christ given for you. And then he would just say, keep it. And whisper it in my ear. Mm. And then that would mean I should dip it in the wine. So yeah, that running commentary is very good. And you can work out sort of a code with the person that you're with as well. If you know them well enough, you can have code words like that. So keep it means you're going to dip it in the wine. So you're saving quite a lot of words by saying that.
I think that's quite important, isn't it? Because if you have too much running commentary, and I mean, I'm talking as someone who knows what's going to happen, you know, I can kind of sense it by the church that I'm in and how people are behaving and what sort of music they've got and what the sermon's like, you know, you can kind of work out how that's going to work. So then, you know, to me, too much running commentary would actually be quite distracting because I've already sort of worked out what's going on. But maybe if I arrive at the church early enough, an opportunity to explore the church with someone so that I know that, okay, fine, communion is going to be from this point and, you know, it's going to be at the high altar and you're going to need to walk through the chancel and kneel and just to get a sense of how that works before you actually do it so that you don't start kneeling when actually there isn't an altar rail for you to kneel at. You know, those sorts of things would be quite useful.
Absolutely. This is very information dense now. There's loads of sides to this that we would discuss in future episodes. But if you have any questions about anything you've heard or you just want to get in touch with us, maybe submit some questions to the podcast, please do so. And what are the different ways that people can get in touch, Matthew?
Yeah, you can call us on 01858 438 260 or you can email us at SLFC, that's Sight Loss Friendly Church, SLFC@torchtrust.org. Our website is www.torchtrust.org and there is a Sight Loss Friendly Church page on there. We'll put a link to that in the show notes for this podcast.
Well, thank you so much for tuning in and we'll see you for the next episode. Goodbye for now.
Bye for now.